Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Progressively Incorrect. I'm your host, Zach Groeschel, and I'm so excited today to be talking with my former slash current boss, Scotty Jackson, over in Camp Seymour Land. Before that, I'm just going to talk about our sponsors. As you know, John Catt Educational from Hachette Learning sponsors this podcast. They produce great books, evidence-informed books for teachers. And I would really get in contact with them if you're a teacher wanting to publish a book. They are really great at getting teachers off the ground and running with the publishing process. I will put some links into the show notes. Check out their entire catalog of books. Also, as you know, I'm the director of STEP Lab North America, and we have tons of events for instructional coaches year-round, including the upcoming Instructional Coaching Intensive in New York City. Check out the links in the show notes. I'd love to see you there. Scotty, it is great to finally have you on the podcast.
Zach, thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you today.
We have a history going back to like 2009, maybe. This is a long partnership working with kids and with camps. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself. You're sort of not a conventional guest in the sense that you come at educating kids from a different angle.
Yeah, absolutely. I have one of the greatest tools available to me, and that's an overnight camp, you know, is a great tool for teaching. And what's fun is I rotate kids through every week, you know, so it's more like we see thousands of kids in a year and have a great opportunity to just plant some seeds, you know, whereas a lot of your traditional teachers spend a year in the classroom and get to kind of work with kids and watch them evolve. I hopefully get them year after year after year and have opportunities to watch them grow that way.
So Camp Seymour, it's the camp that, well, it got me started in the sense that it sort of was like my transition camp away from Boy Scouts and into just sort of the world of YMCA camps. Tell me about camp. It's such a fixture in American childhood. Like, what makes it unique and an important tradition, like an important experience for kids growing up?
Yeah, camp in general, and I think it's been around a long time. You know, I think camp, the history of camp in America goes back like 140 years or something like that. And even at Camp Seymour, we've been here, I think we're at 118 years or something like that now. But I think in the early days of camp, it was just about getting kids out into the woods, get them out of the cities. You know, a lot of times the Y was big on taking kids on scholarships. So they would just find kids that are, you know, getting in trouble outside the Y. Sometimes they would sell soap or they would sell candy bars to earn their $5 to pay their way to camp. But, you know, they'd come out here to the woods and just have an adventure. And I think the biggest part was, you know, getting away from parents, letting them make some of their own decisions, you know, and letting kids kind of be kids and let them problem solve and make some friends the old fashioned way. And I think camp has evolved, but we kind of stick with those same principles. You know, we want to give them the opportunity to grow as individuals, you know, build confidence. Those things happen these days just from being away from their parents and making some decisions. And that's kind of where it goes back to the original roots.
I think one of the lessons I've learned from camp that I can apply to schools is you sort of don't notice it. It's almost invisible unless you really tune into kids' experience when they first come to camp. Like we're talking about, they didn't even know why they kind of got signed up for it. Their mom was like, you know, I'm a member of the Y. Here, you know, you can go here for a week. And they come in and they stand at the amphitheater or around the campfire. And all the kids who've already been to camp are singing. Like immediately just start dancing and standing up and singing. And you go like, this is a repeat after me song. And all the kids say, this is a repeat after me song. And they look around like, what on earth is going on? And they see these adults, these young adults standing up and acting goofy. It's something about being part of something bigger than yourself. How do you sort of get that up and running in terms of your staff training and so on? How do you get that to happen every year for every kid?
Yeah, I think we practice those behaviors with staff because it's just as shocking to a new staff. You know, we get a lot of international staff and they might come from somewhere around the world. And then they're standing there too at their first campfire. And all of a sudden somebody's on stage and just starts playing a song and people jump out of their seats and are, you know, and are singing the song and dancing. And as an outsider, you want to figure it out. You want to figure out, like, it's almost like joining a sense of belonging. Like, I want to be able to sing along with this song and learn the words. And it's one of those things where you're building an expert in a kid that's been there year after year. You know, they get to practice some expertise in something, even if it's just jumping around and singing a song. And then that's inspirational to the new kids. They want to learn. That's part of having a great culture and tradition. You know, there is those little pieces of camp.
Well, you see the kid who comes up and says like the one line, like I don't know, like the invisible bench skit comes to mind where they walk up and they say, "Oh, I moved that bench ages ago," and then all the campers fall down because they were sort of squatting on a fake bench. And we've heard the joke before. Everybody probably who comes year after year has seen this before, and that kid just gets this one line, and there's this moment of probably a fear of anxiety of saying that line. And then the entire campfire just erupts with like just, you know, overjoyed laughter and applause. I've had so many emotional moments that are sort of engineered to get kids in front of each other and performing. I kind of want to dig more though into this staff training piece because you're working with 19-year-olds. That's an opportunity maybe for them to go a different way. I mean, they can show off for their friends. They're really in it. You know, there's no money in camp, but they're in it just to get a couple of bucks over the summer. How do you get them in there and you instill that culture from the very beginning?
Yeah, it's interesting because I think, you know, maybe they signed up for the money. It's not a lot of money. That's probably not the reason they came. You know, but somebody told them to get a job. You have to get a job this summer, you know. And maybe they went to camp as a kid, or maybe they think it's an opportunity to use their sailing skills or their paddling skills or something else. But I think when they get here, they drink the Kool-Aid too. And you know, you joke about how camp is good for these kids, and at this point, I view kids as, you know, 8 years old to 27, you know, because a lot of them are, a lot of them are still going through the same learning processes. But I think you have them take the spotlight themselves. You know, you have them, maybe it's hard for them to get on stage. They haven't been on a stage leading a song for our kids. They haven't been teaching a game to other kids. And it just takes time and rehearsal. You know, the first time you make them come and be the mosquito in the mosquito skit, which is like a non-speaking, 10 of them run out together and just make mosquito noises, you know? And then the next time they get a speaking part, they get a line. And I think it just creates something special. You know, when you were talking about that at campfire, I think of like a 4-year-old on stage at family camp. And you know this because your daughter's close to this category, but you know, they come up and they sing the ABC song and they're really shy and it's A, B, C, D. You know, and what happens is at the end of it, everybody goes crazy. They cheer them on, and it's just this incredible moment. And what happens is the next year, that camper, just like with the staff, they come back with their own material. They wrote a song, or they came prepared to lead another song because they're ready to get on stage. And that's what happens with the staff. You have to kind of prep them through. Here's how you run this activity. Here's how you get the most out of it. And I think the other thing that really helps with staff training is we talk a lot about outcomes that we're looking for, you know, and you know, some of those are around like the core values of the why. We like to teach kids about respect, responsibility, caring, and honesty are our core values. But you know, how can we teach that through a game? How do you teach that through something that happens on a campfire stage? And you know, the other thing was, you know, maybe this activity is designed to build self-confidence, you know, or build self-esteem, or teach them to work together is kind of the outcomes we're aiming for. And then you reverse engineer things. You know, how do you take a simple name game and turn it into them being respectful or kind to another kid? You know, those are the pieces that are kind of the unexpected outcomes, you know, that we're aiming for in camp.
I just think that you can apply these lessons to schools much more often than we do. Like I understand like there's 180 days and things are tiring, and I recently went to a school called One Degree Academy, and they had a like one of the like the tour guide was just like a little kid, like two little kids, like you know, bringing me around. And at the end of the day, after a lot of structured learning, they go and have an assembly. In the assembly like hall in the gym, the kids are just going nuts, and it felt like camp. And at the end, I asked the tour guide, I was like, "Tell me about this contrast. During the day, you guys are pretty quiet and studious, and at the end of the day, you just went nuts." And she was like, "Because here at One Degree Academy, we celebrate each other's successes." And it was a cultural piece that had been that the teachers, I think, had all sort of slowly instilled and produced and engineered. I just think that that's where it lives, is in summer camp.
Yeah, well, and you know what? I feel it built into your program when you were had that little guy as a tour guide too. You know, the fact that he's leading your tour, it's already built into the program. You know, you prepped him for that. I can imagine there were some mock tours that he probably did, and you know, you kind of work towards something, then you're able to deliver it. So it's just as good as delivering on a presentation in class if you're prepared to be the little kid running the tour for adults, you know, that come to visit the school. It's really built in, and that's exciting.
You mentioned character building, respect, responsibility, honesty, and caring. You could easily just not do those things and just focus on just let's just make this as fun as possible and not even mention this element of it. What role does that have for you, like in terms of your values and why that's important in the summer camp experience?
Yeah, it's probably the reason I've made this a career. You know, it's what sets us apart because you could pass through here and be fun. And I think there's a lot of camps like that around the country where there's a lot of fun. The focus is on fun. It may not even be a focus on making new friends. That might be an inadvertent coincidence that it happens. But you know, they do some fun things and that's great. I'm glad everybody had a good time. But as a staff member, I need the bigger reward than that, you know, and I realized like I started in outdoor environmental education and I was there to teach kids science concept. I wanted them to be little environmentalists and learn to take care of the water and learn to recycle and learn to compost and all those important lessons. But what I realized is we were working with like inner city kids down in the Bay Area and they weren't ready for environmental concepts if they couldn't get along and they couldn't be kind to each other and they couldn't and so I shifted gears to a summer camp role to be able to teach those things to kids because I think it's you're missing something if you're not teaching kids these values. And you know, coming out of COVID, you know, we'd raise our hands, you know, like you know, I got 100 kids there and I'd say tell me who had a hard time, you know, during COVID, what was rough about it, you know, and they'd tell me this or that or whatever it was. And what do we all need now? And what we landed on is that we all just need a little more kindness. Everybody needs to slow down and be kind to each other. And it really solved a lot of like long-term discipline problems at camp and kids not getting along because they realized we should just be kinder than usual. And it was a great way to start. And I think we just watch for those opportunities in camp too. The other one is about, you know, when we put them in a cabin and there's 11 of them living together, the other joke is I have them raise their hand again. If you have 11 of brothers and sisters and you all live in the same bedroom, you know, and talk about what that might be like, because that's what we're doing at camp. And it takes a certain like level of commitment from each kid, which is them learning about being responsible and them learning about caring to be able to pull it off and get along together for a week. That's a big deal in itself.
And you know, you get the kids off the ground and running so quickly. I mean, it's like day one, they're sitting in, or day two, maybe they're sitting in a circle, what we call embers, right? Where they're sitting on the ground and they're sharing about their day. And we often hear this sort of narrative, right? That kids, you know, you really have to like sort of wait to see if they can warm up to it. But like, if you create immediately the conditions for safety and for kindness, you see kids sharing something that was, you know, and being vulnerable in front of a bunch of strangers in like 48 hours. Like, I think it's pretty impressive. It kind of tell you shows kind of where the bar is for me.
Yeah, it's amazing what can happen in just a short week is, and I think the strength of that is the returning kids that have done it before, that are ready for, oh yeah, at the end of the day, we talk about this. We talk about how our day went, or we talk about what might have been hard or something we'd like to see better. And then I think the other part that's important is that we solve those problems. Like if somebody wasn't getting along or there was some sort of a conflict or, you know, somebody had a bathroom thing that stunk up the whole cabin or something, you know, like how do we find that? You know, well, how do you solve these things? And I think we saw, you know, we talk them through and take the time to listen and solve things. And I think that might be the missing piece these days. And I think, you know, when I was a kid, I'm going to take you back a little further. So I was a kid in trouble at camp. I don't want to go into the whole story, but I was in, you know, there was more than one of times that I was in trouble as a little day camper at one of the YMCA Camp Quinnipiquin in Massachusetts. Shout out Camp Quinnipiquin. But I think what happened was at school, I was also in trouble at school. And at school, they were quick to like send me to the principal or keep me after school or call my mom. And at camp, they took the time to like sit and listen to the reason behind it, you know, and one of them involved some popsicle sticks and arts and crafts. And really all they landed on, all I needed was some glue so that I could make a castle out of these things instead of, you know, throwing them around at my friends and doing causing some other trouble. But I really appreciated the time that they took at camp to solve the problem. And I think that's a lot of what we do, like with embers and just time in the cabin. Well, a week is a long time away from a parent. And, you know, we go through those homesickness and all the early things and they settle in, but I think they settle in when they hear other kids listening to what was hard about their day, you know, or what could be better or how they could support each other in having a better day the next day. And I think those are important pieces of camp.
Yeah, it's awesome. You mentioned COVID. Coming out of COVID, one of the surprising things, at least for me, was that it seems like the country has really turned away from screens, or we still see them used too much, but there's just been a cultural shift, I think, an awareness around technology being not so great as part of childhood. And so Camp Seymour, at least, sort of is tech free. You come in and you're away from your phone. Have you noticed shifts in camper behavior? Have you noticed a change since sort of camp has become this one sanctuary away from screens?
I think it's getting harder and harder. And I think it seems different at different ages. You know, a lot of the 8, 9, 10-year-olds don't bat an eye on it because they're not tethered to a phone yet in their life. I mean, it's starting to happen. It's more, maybe it's a little bit more on the iPad side or a tablet, you know, that they're using all the time. But I think, you know, who appreciates it is the older kids. Cause I think we talk with older teens about, you know, social media and how stressful social media can be. And they really, the long-term teens really appreciate it. It's hard when you're new and you get used to leaving a phone at home, or, you know, someday I'm hoping to have the jammer switch that I can just, you know, flick the switch and turn everybody's phones off while they're here. But we watch the staff go through it too. It's just as hard on them because it's their alarm clock. It's their music library. It's their, you know, it comes up in life that there's things in there you want to check. What are those sports scores? What are the, you know, how did this team do here? But I think as long as you find those things, you know, like I think about a crew that was interested in the World Cup soccer scores a few years back. And what we ended up doing was, you know, we'd find the game on our TV in the dining hall. And for the 12 kids that were interested in the World Cup, you know, we brought them down at 5 in the morning. They could come down and watch the World Cup together. You know, so you found a way to get them the answer to that sports score. You know, the other thing like the teens are looking for is they all want the great Instagram photo. You know, they want one that tells the story of them being on the ropes course or them paddling a kayak or them jumping in the sound or something. And I think we pull that off with just having a great photographer and making the photos available. You know, Snappy's our photographer and she works hard to make sure there's a picture of all these kids having these great moments. So if nothing else, the great moment was captured and they can download those when they get home and find the picture later and put them on their social media if that's what they want to do. You know, it's kind of theirs at that point. We don't do a lot with kids on social media, but they can put their stuff up and get what they want out of it. But you know, it's been getting harder and harder. And I'm wondering, I think camps around the country are all looking at the future of phones at camp and what year are they here? Because sometimes it's from the parents, you know, sometimes it's the parents that are having a hard time not being able to reach their kids. And, you know, what we always tell them is no news is good news. And they can call us and we'll go check in on their kids. And sometimes we'll take a picture of them having fun without the kids seeing it, you know, so that they don't know they're being checked up on. But, you know, it's part of teaching the parents a little bit about letting go too. There's another lesson in helping parents evolve. And that's probably a whole nother podcast talking about what the growth that parents go through while their kids come to camp too. But we're getting there with tech. And I think, you know, there's always some pressure to lean towards letting the tech back into camp. And I don't want to be like the old guy that's holding it out of there, you know, but what I do like doing is involving the teens in the discussions. You know, we talk about that when the adults go out, you know, they go out to the bar or something and they stack their phones and, you know, and the first one that touches the stack of phones pays for that round. We talk about what's the teen equivalent of that. And we talk about how do you prove to others that you're present in a conversation, you know, what, and that's eye contact and just listening and repeating back. And really we work with the kids on those kind of simple communication skills just by practicing, you know, just by practicing and getting away from their phones. And then I think what happens is they go back to their phones and with hindsight, that's when they really begin to appreciate camp and want to go again next year and realize that they made some genuine friendships and hopefully rekindling those by seeing the same kids in the following year. The one thing Tech helps with is they stay in touch outside of camp. You know, now they can connect with other kids a little bit easier, and then they all sell it and come again on the same week in the following year. You know, I'm like, how come this session sold out in 24 hours? And it's because these 13-year-olds are all in touch with each other, you know.
I remember last summer or 2 summers ago with the teens, we were out on the Compass course and we were playing this game called Sardines, which is like basically hide and seek. But once you find someone, you sit next to them like and lay down like you're in a sardine, can, and then it sort of accumulates and it's a really fun game. And so we're out there, but you have to be quiet because it's hide and seek. And we're sitting there and it's a really forested, beautiful part of the campus. And I remember, hearing the wind and the leaves and the rustling and okay, was that a raccoon? What was that? And when we all came back together after this experience, after we were all found, that was what they all mentioned. They're like, it was so quiet. It was just it, and just hearing that wind. I think it's Walt Birdsall, our mutual friend, who talks about like the first time a kid hears the wind for because they're a city kid and they've never heard the wind rustling through the trees. I just think this nature piece is so important too.
Yeah, and we do a piece too. We do some trips programs with like older kids where they go out to the Olympic Coast, and you know, one of the days they spend an afternoon, I think, as a solo. And by a solo, we're just a couple hundred yards down the beach. We spread them out a couple hundred yards apiece, and the staff kind of monitor both ends and make sure they're doing okay. But it's the same thing with time alone. You know, for the first half an hour, they don't know what to do with themselves, but all of a sudden they're building something out of logs, or they're just getting creative and finding fun wilderness stuff to do, maybe for the first times in their lives, you know. And I think it's that outdoor adventure piece is really important too. Just getting kids to, and anything's an adventure when you don't know how it's going to come out. You know, when you don't know what the outcomes are, or you don't know how to get there, because kids are so many times these days, they're put in situations where the answers are right there for them, or they can jump on their phone and look up the answers to stuff, or how do you do this, or how do you make this happen? And when they have to get to use their brain a little to discover, like, oh, I can, what do I do to entertain myself? Or how does this happen? Or where did this floaty thing come from? Did this come all the way from Japan on the water? You know, this is the, and now it's sitting on the beach on the West Coast. It's really interesting to watch them learn and discover, because I think that's what's part of an adventure.
I'm interested in like the role that camp had for me, in addition to like being able to express myself and be, I'm just not a very socially extroverted type of human being normally. Like the ability to like try to make a name for yourself or be friends very quickly was very important. But also it was the fact that camp is still there. Like it's there's continuity. There's something I can rely on as a predictable sort of facet of my life. How do you manage like alumni and all of these people that have sort of come through the years who want to continue to have some element of camp in their lives once they've gone on and got real jobs and so on?
Yeah, I think we build for that, because I think, you know, one of the things we talk about on any given summer is we talk about preparing kids for whatever's next in their life, because they're going to go, they're changing schools. Maybe their family dynamic is changing. Maybe they're moving to a new community or something. And we like to better prepare them for whatever those situations are. But what happens is when you're doing that year after year after year as a kid, you're better preparing for adulthood and being an adult and changing jobs and moving on and being a leader, you know, and maybe being a supervisor. You hope you picked up all those skills from camp, because I think when they're there, those are, you're putting them in situations where they're going to be successful still as adults. And that's all we can hope for at camp. I don't care if they stay in camping. I don't care if they become educators. I'm always proud of all those people that do all that. But whatever they go on to, I just wish them huge, huge success. And what you hope for is that they come back as volunteers. I just made a connection with another one recently who's going to come back and be on, I'll tell you the name later, that was going to come back and be on my advisory council, because they stumbled back in after 10 years. You know, they came to one of our like summer alumni barbecues or something and realized like, I miss this place. I need to be part of this. And they were somebody that was an incredible leader back in their day, gone on to huge success. And now, whether that's financially supporting the program and helping get some foster kids here or whatever that looks like, they're going to help make it happen. My real goal is I hope they go on to huge, huge success. And then they're building cabins here someday and helping with dining halls and helping, you know, be long-term donors, leaving endowment, contributing to our endowment gifts and really being long-term contributors here.
Awesome. Well, I think we can kind of come to a close here on a question that kind of lingers for me. What do you see as the next sort of steps or your vision for the future of summer camp? Like, are there things that and traditions that you hope to continue, and are there new innovations you see on the horizon? Like, what's going to be the role of camp in the next 50 to 100 years?
I just think it's still an incredible tool. You know, I was involved in a project. I just spent some time in Kosovo and North Macedonia helping some of the YMCAs in the West Balkans area. They all want to build American style summer camps because I think they're recognizing the power of this tool. You know, they're recognizing that this is something unique. And even post-COVID, it really came out as, you know, we've been kind of thriving post-COVID because it's the tool that everybody needs. They need the outdoors. They need face-to-face communication. They need a break from technology. Those things aren't going away. Some of the camps are embracing it. You know, they have AI programs or they have the computer lab and it's part of their day. And that's great that they can have those opportunities to learn. But, you know, just to get everybody back to the roots, building those traditions was really interesting because being part of those guys building brand new camps has me thinking about how did we start these traditions? And it just took a creative person. You know, you and I both know French and Hall were a couple of camp staff back in the 70s who were track stars. And they used to want to run in the morning. They used to get out and want to run the biggest loop they could in camp. And all of a sudden, they had kids that wanted to go with them, and they're all following them. And now it's become a 30-year plus tradition that we get out and we run what we call German stairs, which has nothing to do with Germans or stairs, but are named for French and Hall, were their last names. But you know, it's just a creative staff doing something fun and original that maybe builds some character or maybe gets them some exercise or maybe does something different that they're not used to. And then letting them reflect on those, you know, and I think the reflection piece that we do is still pretty important too, because they realize that they've grown from this. Or, and we hope that we're sending them home again, better prepared for whatever's next in life, but also, you know, a little more self-confident, a little bit more self-aware, a little bit kinder, a little bit more respectful. I mean, and that's all we can do in a week is plant those seeds. And we hope that camp always has the opportunity to plant those seeds and, you know, that it keeps going strong into the futures, whether we let the tech in or not. You know, I'll retire before that day, but, you know, but whether we let the tech in or not, I think it's just better preparing kids for whatever's next. And there's a definite need for a tool like that.
Awesome. Scotty Jackson, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I'm always looking for new content that kind of tells a story. And so part of my story of becoming a teacher began with an opportunity you gave me back in 2009, where I called you up from the University of Washington. And I think I emailed you like 12 more times. I forgot to say this and I forgot to say that. And you still gave me a chance, even though I was looking like I was probably a little too nervous. I appreciate it. And listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to Progressively Incorrect. If you could spread this around to like your principal, to your colleagues, and give it a 5-star rating, that would be very helpful. And I'll keep on producing these episodes every week. Scotty, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for having me, Zach.